They can hear you.
Okay.
I think we can get started. You can all hear me well. Let's wait to close the door. Good morning. Hope you're having a good trip to Barcelona so far. My name is Vijay Kumar. I'm a senior product manager for Office 365. I handle things like serious topics like security, privacy, and compliance in Office 365. I've been in Office 365 for about 2 years now, and I've done identity management, reliability and performance and things of that nature. All of the things that are related to the platform of Office 365, how do we keep it secure, compliant, reliable, et cetera. I'm pleased to be joined by my colleague here, AJ Schwab, who's part of the engineering team. Go ahead, AJ.
Sure, my name is AJ Schwab. I have had a number of different roles over the years. Right now, I'm an architect within the Office 365 platform. I spent a lot of years doing internal auditing. I spent years as a systems programmer and doing security work. I've done a lot of things over the years, and currently it's my pleasure to work in the area of compliance and privacy.
Yeah. So the conversation that we wanted to have with you today was about compliance and privacy, obviously. But what we hope for you to take away from this session, you're all, mostly IT pros who are working with your, either your legal departments or compliance departments or security departments to kind of understand what are the risks of moving to the cloud. What do we need to be aware of in terms of compliance and privacy and security and things of that nature? What we want to accomplish today is hopefully arm you with enough insights and resources to help you have that conversation internally within your IT department, or even with Microsoft, to ask for the stuff that you really want to need in this space. With that, I'll go ahead and get started with my presentation. I just want to provide a brief background. I don't have to belabor the point too much, but the value of the cloud is, obviously there are a number of economic benefits that you get from the cloud. I don't have to go over all that, we're aware of that. But beyond that, I do want to stress that one of the key aspects of the cloud value is delivering new features and value. And we've delivered so many features and functionality and innovations over the last couple of years to Office 365. It's just amazing. If I think back to 2 years, 2 years back when I was working on Office 365, it's hard for me to recognize it. It's that that much richer now. And we have this continuous release cadence. We have our concept of minor and major upgrades. We want to be where we're also in this journey of dealing with challenges like, how do we inform our customers? What do we tell them? How early do we tell them about updates coming, et cetera? But the point is that the innovation, fast pace of innovation is here to stay, and that's one of the big values that the cloud offers. The second pillar is trust and compliance, of course. Security comes first for us because Office 365, we bet big on Office 365. We are far more careful than any one particular organization itself when it comes to security and privacy and things of that nature, because this is the question of credibility for us. And we also want to keep up with evolving standards. Standards are evolving. There was some study that was done in the last 1 year alone. There were some 10,000 regulations that came out around the world. So we want to keep track of it. We want to monitor the landscape and figure out what's important, how do we prioritize and things of that nature, and how do we get our engineering to focus on the things that matter to our customers. And lastly, cloud offers quick response to customer feedback. We have a model, you might be aware, we have a DevOps model. Basically, it's the developers, it's the feature developers that are working on the service to build and run the service are the ones that are supporting it as well. So when there is a serious issue about a particular aspect of the service, it is our developers that work on it. So they have this direct feedback, real-time information about how the customers are perceiving a particular issue or whatever, right? So they get to work on that. Just a quick show of some of the things that we have delivered in the past year or so. And this is just a snapshot of some of the features that we have delivered. And if I think back in the world like five or 7 years ago, you'd have to wait a year or two to get some of these features in the new release, test it, deploy it in your environments. But now, we just update it. We just update it in the service. We let you know that you can turn it on. You have to, when it comes to compliance and privacy and things of that nature, you have certain controls where you can turn it off or turn on certain features and things like that. But this is just an example, and we're moving really fast, and our organizations are becoming even more agile while we are thinking about security and compliance. We have dedicated teams, we call it the trust team within Office 365, that is thinking about standards, compliance, security, and things like that. So just a double click on some of the recent capabilities that we were able to deliver because we run the service. We delivered Office for iPad, of course, through Office 365. I know that was obviously hugely popular. Some of the upcoming things, video in Office 365. This is an enterprise video that we are delivering in a compliant way, so you can upload videos and things like that. It's all built into the service. And then Delve and Office Graph, of course, that can share with you intelligent information about your own use of certain whatever features, right? If you're in SharePoint or Link or Exchange, you're using your own calls, you're looking at certain documents, Delve can surface to you what it is that you may be interested in instead of you going hunting for things that you may want. So these are the kinds of features that we're able to deliver because we're in the service. While at the same time, we also give you privacy controls. I'll take Dell, for example. We have extensive privacy controls where you can say, no, I don't want to share this information for anybody with anybody else in my organization, and it allows you to do that. That was just an example to show what we can do with the service. Now, with that, so the conversation becomes, okay, great. Office 365 is great. Cloud is great. We love it. When we are talking to customers, their concerns are, okay, now you have all these great features. Now, how do we use it? How do we, we have all of these regulations that we need to comply with. How well is my data protected in the cloud? What about encryption at rest? How do I know that you're doing what you say you're doing and things like that? And that's where the independent verification comes in, compliance with regulations and standards come in, and that's what we want to talk to you about. And the fascinating thing is not just about compliance certifications itself, but it is how we do it. And we want to share some insights with you on how we approach compliance, how we do it, so that you can have a much more intelligent conversation within your own organizations about compliance. AJ, do you want to add anything?
Sure. No, I think this is a really big question. As I've been down at the booth and having people come up and they want to talk about this, this is the question they ask. And very often what we hear, we have people that fly to Redmond, we go out to meet with customers, we talk with people at forums like this, and the overwhelming theme is we want to move to the cloud, but there are questions, right? It's my security department doesn't think it's safe enough. My auditors, my regulators have lots of questions. What we want to do today is we know this is some of the best collection of IT pros that you have in the entire world, and we want to enable you to take information back to help to share and say, this is how this group has gone about approaching this. They've got a systematic way of dealing with this, and this is something they take very seriously. We use this internally within Microsoft. We are all in on Office 365. If you look at the reports that you've seen recently with the earnings reports too, this is a huge growth engine for us. We believe in this. We are deeply committed to this future and enabling the functionality that you get out of the cloud. And we want to make sure that you can, again, take that back and have a meaningful conversation inside your organization and explain to people why this can be the right option for you.
Excellent. Thank you, AJ. So, and all this rolls up to is trust. About a year ago, we did in-depth research. We talked to some of the large enterprise customers, some of the small, customers of various sizes from various industries, et cetera. Like, what does it take for you to trust us to go to the cloud? So they came up with three things: security, privacy, and compliance, and of course, transparency about all of these things. So before I get into the meat of the content here, I do want to mention we'll reserve questions for towards the end of the session. We'll give you about 10 or 15 minutes to come up and ask questions, and we'll have a conversation about it. And I also have a few giveaways. I have passes for the office party tonight. I would say the most sought after party. And I also have some Trust Center branded dry bags that you can use for your phone to protect your phone if you're going, doing some water sports or anything like that. So just wanted to throw that out there. So let's get into the talk about earning trust. So it's a key thing. Key thing is to look at what is our credibility in this space. Like, what have we been doing over the last couple of decades, right? Microsoft built its first data center in 1989. So we've been doing this for quite a while now. We have over 200 online services today, over 200, including consumer and enterprise services. And of course, we've launched enterprise cloud services like Azure and Office 365 and things like that. But we're also, you would notice, we've also taken a lot of steps towards trust. We established something called trustworthy computing. We had, standards and international standards and certifications all over the place. And some of the key things that are important to you, like EU model clauses, ISO 27001, the latest version of ISO 27001, industry-specific things like FSMA and CJIS and things like that. We're continuing to add the capabilities at the platform level that will make you confident that, yes, these guys are meeting, Office 365 is meeting the key international standards, so I can trust them. So real quick, the principles of trust for Office 365, basically, we want to stress, we codify this in our contracts, it is your data. It is customers' data, you own it, you control it, and we actually codify this in our contracts. We call you the data owner, data controller, while we are the data processors. We run the service for you, and we're accountable to you. And through these lens, we look at security, privacy, and compliance, and underlying all of this is transparency of operation. So let's talk about compliance and independent verification next. Go ahead, Vijay.
Okay. So as I mentioned, I was an internal auditor for a few years, and independent verification was a big deal. It's a big deal when you are consuming an outside service. We understand this. We bring in third parties to provide validation, and I'll walk through some examples of who we are getting to come in and do that. I'll also give you some information about the audit calendar that we have. But I understand, as years of being an internal auditor, I was known as a pretty tough grader. But my word only mattered so much, and it was when we brought in Deloitte and Touche to come along and say, yes, what they've done is correct. That mattered. And so when we say that we have regulatory compliance, but we really want you to have high confidence in that, we know we've got to bring in a third party, and we bring in a number of third parties who can sign off on that, and I'll show you a brief example of what some of those results look like as well.
Yes. So three key things about compliance: the third-party validation, as AJ mentioned, regulatory compliance. Many of you are in regulated industries like FinServ, healthcare, government, public sector, etc. So you need to meet certain regulations. Those are the laws, and you need to have the confidence in the results that you are getting what you think you're getting. So our compliance, just like our security, we look at it in two dimensions. Two equal and important dimensions: built-in capabilities for global compliance. This is all about enabling you to meet compliance standards or regulations like ISO 27001, EU model clauses, HIPAA, FSMA, etc., and contractual commitments to privacy, security, and handling of careful handling of your data. So, if you think about it, in the on-prem world, you have to do all of this by yourself. Our goal is to make it easier for you. The compliance is easier in the cloud because we take care of a number of these things for you. yes, there are two parties in this. It's Microsoft and the customer. Customer has to do their part, but to a large part, when it comes to the online services, we take care of these things. We give you the reports. We give you what you need to be able to comply with the regulations. The second aspect, and equally important, is the customer controls. You may have internal policies that you need to comply with, or you may need to augment some of the some parts of your internal organization itself to make sure you're complying. We do provide admin controls like data loss prevention, archiving, e-discovery, et cetera, to enable organizational compliance within your tenant. Even though it's the service, we provide you more and more controls as we go forward. This is a big area of investment for us as well. I'll talk to you a little bit later on in the presentation. But we've invested heavily to make sure we give you the best-in-class data loss prevention, archiving, e-discovery solutions to enable organizational compliance. So, great, we talked about compliance a lot, but let's talk a little bit about how Office 365 approaches compliance. How do we meet compliance?
Sure. So what you'll see on the left-hand side here is you'll see a number of the things that we provide for you, whether it's physical security, secure networking. These are all the types of things that we provide in the on-prem environment. That's from everything from how we patch the servers to how we test the software that we're building and how we roll that out and test it to make sure that it's going to work before it's on the servers. Everything that we do internally, Vijay mentioned the customer controls. What we have that helps us internally to tie that together is a master control set. And I'll walk through a few slides that explain that. But what we're doing in the master control set is we're breaking down all of the things that we've taken obligations for, and we're putting that into very concrete steps that our teams can take internally to make sure that they're complying with the commitments that we've made. So if we say, for example, that we need to comply with EU model clauses, what we're going to do is we're going to take the language out of that and we're going to break that down. And by breaking it down into discrete steps, we can measure whether people are complying with it, and we can help them understand, for us to achieve compliance, these are the actual individual things that you have to do in Exchange Online, in SharePoint Online, in Link Online. This is what you have to do. This is how you have to operate the service. The other thing that you'll see is standards. So you've got a number of standards bodies that are listed here, and there's more that are out there. But those standards help to inform that control set. They help to inform the obligations that we've taken and to make it possible for us to go out and assert compliance and then help you, if you are in a regulated industry, to say to your regulators, yes, I can use Office 365 because they've given me enough information to prove that they are a trustworthy provider.
Yes. So just to give you a sense for the number of, we have a big number up there, over 900. I think it's over 1,000 controls today. Just to give you a sense, ISO 27001 has about 170 or so controls,
something like that.
So we are very, very comprehensive about it. So if there are new regulations that come in the future, we are pretty confident that we already either meet it or we have a small delta that we need to work on, and we work on the controls so we are able to comply with that, and we continuously monitor. We'll talk about that.
Okay. So a little more detail on our control set itself. Now, when we built our control set, we based it on this special publication 800-53. If you're not familiar with NIST, it is the National Institute of Standards and Technology. They're based out of the U.S., but this is truly a global set of standards. And if you look at how NIST develops their standards, they put things out for public comment. They get the comments from people across different industries. They solicit that, or they harmonize that feedback in, and they publish standards. So it's a very familiar process. If you've seen the ISO development process, it's very comparable to that. The reason that we chose NIST is because of its specificity and its adaptability. If you look at the example control that I've placed here on the screen, this is about unsuccessful login attempts. And remember, I mentioned that we want to go to our teams and we want to provide them with the exact things that they have to do to manage a compliance service. So if you look at this, here you have language about enforcing a specific number of invalid login attempts and specifying the timeline in which those can occur. Because as all of you know, from a security standpoint, if I can attempt an unlimited number of logins, I can eventually break down the security of the system. So here we've got very specific detail about what has to happen. And then it goes into specifying what we do when that threshold has been exceeded. So it's giving us that granularity that we need. But again, like I said, it's adaptable as well. So if you look at the numbers that are out there, if we were to undertake a new regulation tomorrow, let's say that there was a regulation out of France that we wanted to comply with, and the French came along and they said, this is the number that you have to meet. We could harmonize that into the complete framework, and then that would be work that we would have to go off and do to make sure that we've raised the high watermark for the entire service to go and meet that. But again, NIST is very adaptable in terms of harmonizing a very large number of standards. So if you look at the control set itself, you'll see here I've got a few examples, and these are pulled directly to reflect the example I provided a minute ago. This is about unsuccessful login attempts. And here you can see on screen that I've got, well, if you can see the laser pointer, we can click down, we can see what the implementation details are. So I can go out internally and I can see how is Exchange doing this, how is SharePoint doing this. I can look internally and see how we're actually satisfying that. We've also got additional material that I can't put on the screen here. It's just there's not enough screen to fill it all up. But I can show all of the different certifications that we're complying with. What are all of the values that come out of those certifications? And what have we come up with as an aggregate number to satisfy that? So it's really about us internally doing a lot of that work. We want to eat the complexity of compliance for you by harmonizing all of that internally and then providing back out to you a set of audits and a set of reports that help you to understand that we've done that hard work for you. So again, I mentioned the control set, you know, is really absorbing that regulatory complexity. Here you can see a number of the controls that are listed. But as Vijay mentioned before, there's over 900 controls. We've got a tremendous amount of detail in the control set to help us to make sure that we are, again, meeting the compliance of all the different certifications that are out there.
Just to add something here, control set matters is, for example, let's take access control. And how does it translate to some of the things that we do in the service? If we take access control, we look at, it's very comprehensive, we look at who has access to the service. For example, you know, all the way from admins on the tenant that have access to the service, and the admins in the service itself, the operators of the service, like Microsoft admins that have to maintain or troubleshoot the service. Not sure if you attended the Tuesday session that I had about security. We talked about a process called Lockbox, where we actually regulate even Microsoft admins or Microsoft operators that may have certain amount of access to the service. So we make sure they're background checked, they're screened to make sure they're good enough for us to give them access to the service. And then once they're done, even then, they don't have any standing privileges to the service. They have zero standing privileges. So if they need access to the service to do some troubleshooting, let's say they need to do some load balancing operation, move some mailboxes from one server to another. So they need to request access, and that goes up to his manager. He needs to approve it. And once he approves it, they get 4-hour default, they get 4-hour access to the service. And if they're not able to finish whatever it is they were trying to do in 4 hours, they have to go through the process all over again. And once they get into the service itself, they only have access to a very specific list of actions that they can do on the service. So we look at this very carefully, and all of these actions are audited, and our executives review all of these who accessed the service, how many times, for what, and things like that, to make sure that we continually reduce. Our vision is, at some point in the future, we need to not have any human access to the service at all. So we automate everything so that there is no the perception of risk that the customers have is minimized as much as possible in this space. So that's all of these kinds of little things that we do in the service to control access ladders up to an access control control set in terms of the regulatory standard or a compliance standard. So what does this all mean? Like, how does this all render up to, you know, render, and how does it all matter to you as customers? So we get all of these, we get to tick off all of these certifications. This is just a sample, and we have many more internally. So as you can see, a number of these regulations are market specific, some of these are global as well. So the point is, we're trying to look at global regulations to make sure our customers are, anywhere in the world are able to trust the service. At the same time, we're also addressing specific verticals, whether it's healthcare or defense or government, or even region specific, like Europe or China, et cetera. So we're trying to scale this globally as well as go deep to particular verticals. So I look at these certifications, a personal story that made it real for me. My wife runs a Montessori. When she started running the Montessori, one of the things that we had to do was go to Department of Education. This was one of the things that we had to do. It was this is an example of a regulatory compliance. Well, so we had to submit the plan of the building, what we were doing for fire safety, and this, all sorts of things. There was a person that came who was thorough in checking off to make sure everything was in its place. The entrance was in the right place, exit was in the right place, etc. And after all of that, she gave like a certificate, and we hung it up on the wall. So what does it mean? But when parents came to admit their students, it was very important to them. They saw that and said, okay, you're certified by the Department of Education in Washington State. So now I can trust you. So that's where it kind of becomes real. We can say all we want about how we are doing things and in the service and things like that, but what makes it real is when an independent third party looks at it and goes, yes, you do the things you say you do. Anyway, so the couple of key regulations that I do want to point out here, recent ones. Article 29 Working Committee, Working Party approval, and AJ has a slide on it, he'll talk about it more. EU model clauses, we were the first cloud services provider to get EU model clauses, to contract out EU model clauses. We also got SOC 2 reports recently. These are all important to international customers and, especially customers in the EU. We're also working on something called ISO 27018, which is the latest privacy ISO standard that goes into privacy. It's called
data protection for cloud service providers.
Right. It deals with how to deal with PII information and things of that nature. So just to let you know, we're continuously working on these standards and certifications. Go ahead, DJ.
So one of the things that we have to do as well is when you take all these, yes. Sure.
With all the certifications, I think that you've done actually a great job kind of making sure that you can carry out this service globally and different countries and so on. But still, considering that Microsoft is a U.S. company, and I can imagine that U.S. legislation can contradict with some of the other legislations. Mm-hmm. How Microsoft is going to address the issue that U.S. government at some point of time can come and say, okay, well, we want you to provide access to the data of this customer and basically overrule the certification you may have in other jurisdiction.
Okay, let me repeat that question back so that it'll get picked up on the audio. And please tell me if I'm capturing this incorrectly. So the question was, Microsoft is a U.S.-based company. How do we address the question that a U.S. court may come and issue a subpoena that we are then obligated to respond to for data from an overseas company or people who are subject to other jurisdictions? Is that a reasonable?
Right.
Okay. So if you look, there's actually a case going on right now, and some of you may be familiar with this. There's a case where we have a company, I believe they're based in Ireland, and a U.S. court issued a ruling that said Microsoft has to surrender data for Irish nationals who are using the service. And the last time I saw an update on that, we are actually actively fighting that in court. So we continue to basically take that up, to higher and higher courts. because we understand that this is not a scalable solution, right? For us to be able to provide a global cloud, we have to be able to provide you with insight. And so that is our standing commitment today. If you look, our commitment is if we get a subpoena, regardless of what it's for, if we have a law enforcement request for information, our commitment to you is we will redirect that to the administrator who is designated to run your service. And the only way that we will ever take an action is if the tenant administrator is essentially non-responsive. So we will go through several attempts to get the tenant administrator involved. If they eventually are completely non-responsive, then I could get some more detail on that, but at that point we will engage. But basically, we want to offer a global cloud service, right? If we get to the point where you have to have a cloud in every specific state or every specific country, the scale is just, it's not right. And so this is the challenge that we work with, right? We hear this all the time. This is the question. And I'm not sure where this is, I'm not sure how this plays out over the long term, but this is a question that will have to get settled. But like I said, I think actions, well, I didn't say this a second ago, but to me, actions speak louder than words. And the fact that we are actively fighting that court order and continuing to appeal that in the U.S. court should help to give you a sense of where we want to go.
Yeah, just one more thing to add, and I think we have a couple of slides just on that. We'll talk about it later on in the presentation, in the privacy section. But just a couple of things to add. Brad Smith, our chief legal counsel for Microsoft, has been very vocal about this. We've written several blogs about it, about what we are doing, how we are doing it, and things like that. And we also publish a transparency report about the number of requests that we get from the U.S. government. So, and we're continuing to push them to be more transparent so we can tell the customers what it is that they're doing, what it is that they're asking for, and things of that nature. We're also leading a consortium with the other online services, like even our competitors like Google and Facebook and others, to actually fight with the U.S. government and say, this undermines our credibility. We cannot do this, right? So we take it extremely seriously. I hope that point comes across. Anyway, we'll get back to the slide.
Sure. Is that? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. So
if we can hold off questions towards the end, that would be great.
Okay. So one thing, too, is this is an ongoing process. You can't just bring in a set of regulations and stop there. If you're familiar, for example, with ISO 27001, you know there was a major update that came last year. And if we were to continue to offer you ISO 27001 according to the 2005 standard, let's say we're in 3 years, I'm telling you, hey, I got 2005 version of ISO 27001. Okay, that's great, but that's not very useful to me. So we have to not only maintain the compliance and keep up with the standards as they're evolving, but then there is also this question of what else can you do? What else can you add? And so we have a formal process where we go out and we look at what's going on in the market, and we do a formal analysis. We see if there are gaps against our current control set. If there are, then we look at what does it mean that, you know, once we say we want to commit to providing something, we will implement the controls, we will document the implementation. That's part of that framework that I showed you a second ago, right? We're going to give people very discrete actions that they have to take, and we're going to document how they're doing that. We would then start up monitoring of that. We would start up audits of that activity. And if there is a gap that would come up, we would have a remediation phase at the end. But this is the ongoing process that we have as we bring in new certification requirements. So again, hopefully what you're taking away from this is a very rigorous process that we're following to make sure that we can maintain this as a sustainable offering over time. So independent testing, I mentioned this briefly. Independent testing, we know, is a very big thing, right? It matters a lot when we sign a contract, but it matters more when a third party comes in and they say, yes, we came in, we looked at evidence, we saw what they're doing, and they are, in fact, doing what they said. So if you go back to this slide, here we've added this one little section about audits. Audits really are the glue that hang this together, because we take what we said we were going to do, we say how that's rationalized to the standard, but then we bring in an expert third party from the outside who looks at that and they say, yes, I'm an expert in this standard. The standard is, in fact, being followed in terms of how this cloud service is being run. And I am willing to professionally put my name against this and say, in my professional opinion, Microsoft is doing what they need to do to satisfy that requirement. If you look at the audit calendar that we've got out here, we actually start an ISO audit on Tuesday of next week. So we have an annual ISO audit, and then you'll see that it's coming up for annual review in November of next year. In the late winter, we start a FedRAMP audit, and then we have one of those in the summertime. And then we do SOC audits in the spring as well. So a number of audits going on over the course of the year to, again, to test what the ongoing effectiveness is. And like I said, that's a third party coming in and testing. That's over and above any internal testing that we're doing.
Yeah, and these auditors are very thorough. I mean, we do multiple auditors. And anybody who's been through an audit of something like this, you might be aware, going through multiple audits is quite a bit of an exercise. But we go, you know, they get to look at every aspect of our service. And like I said, trust team, which is AJ's team, sits within our engineering team, the team that designs and develops Office 365. So they get to sit with them and then understand exactly how we are doing the things that we are doing to make sure that we do satisfy these regulations. This is, or at one point, I hope this comes across, compliance certifying the certifications is not a checklist for us. It's part of what we do, right from the design and all the way to the point of how we run the service.
Vijay alluded briefly to some of the auditors that we use. I think everybody is familiar with BSI. You're all familiar with Deloitte. You may not be as familiar with Secure Info and Verisk Group. They are doing a lot of our FISMA FedRAMP audits today. But these are the third party names that you will see if you're getting copies of our audit reports.
Here are quick question. Why do we use multiple auditors, AJ?
We use multiple auditors today simply because they all have different levels of expertise. So BSI, for example, has a lot of in-depth expertise in ISO. If you look, you remember I said that we're starting an ISO audit on Tuesday. That ISO audit, we're bringing in BSI to do that ISO audit. So we also look and do a careful evaluation of our auditor because we want to make sure that they have market credibility. It doesn't do us a lot of good to publish an audit report with some company that you've never heard of. And so we want to make sure that the market, the audit report that we're putting out has credibility. If you're going to go to, say, the board of directors at your company, your CISO, whoever that's going to be, your chief security officer, and you're going to show them a third-party report, it has to be from somebody who they've heard of and they put trust in as well. So here I've got a small snippet from last year's ISO audit report. There is a lot of additional detail in here, but a lot of this is fairly boring. If you've read audit reports in the past, you'll see this is who we talked to, these are the dates, these are the topics that we covered, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of very good detail. Again, I was an auditor for years. I wrote a lot of that detail. But I also know from being an auditor for years that what people generally care about is the management summary. Right, that's where the rubber hits the road. It's the management summary at the end of the report. If you go to a C-level officer and you give them an audit report, what do? They flip right through and they want to look at the summary section. And so you'll see here, if you look at the summary, the objectives have been achieved. And basically what they're saying is that everything they looked at was found to be effective. Everything was good. Right? That at the end of it, you can tell me who all you spoke to and everything else, but at the end of it, the question is, was it effective or was it not? And when we look at this audit report from last year, the auditor is saying, yep, I looked at everything. It was good.
Question.
Yes?
Can you disclose on average how many issues you get in this kind of audits to resolve?
I would have to do some research on that because I haven't read the last handful of audit reports. So I just don't know. Oh, I'm sorry. The question was, on average, how many issues do you have in the audit reports?
Okay. So that is a nice segue into the next slide. Basically, we share these reports with you. If you're a customer, you can request for an audit report. We not only share ISO audit reports, we also share SOC 2 reports and things like that, which are much more comprehensive. You can actually go through these reports, and there will be things that that are found to be good, acceptable, or some things that are pointed out that we need to go either work on or accepted risks or what have you.
Yeah, so as Vijay mentioned, it's possible to get copies of the latest audit reports. Another thing that we're doing right now, hopefully what you're getting a sense of, is there is a lot of ongoing investment in this space. We continue to put money, time, effort into the space. So we're in the process right now of standing up a program that we call Right to Examine. It's really more of a pilot program, and we've got a number of financial services customers who are in right now working on this with that pilot. Over time, I don't know exactly what that form is going to take, but basically, if you were to look at these large financial services companies, what they're doing is they're coming in and they're re-reviewing a lot of the evidence that the auditor looked at. So it's a way for them to gain some additional assurance, and we continue to look at this and say, how do we provide you with even greater levels of assurance? Because, like I said, we're all in about the cloud. We want you to bring your business to the cloud, and so is we have these conversations, whether it's down in the booth or people coming up and asking questions here, whatever the forum is, we continue to take that input and we're asking this question of how can we do a better job of helping you to understand and gain the comfort that you want, that we're operating the service in a way that works for your business. The biggest issue that we've run into, and I think any global cloud service provider runs into, is one of scale. I can't put someone in every single country to do a new audit with a new customer every single day of the year. And so this is the big challenge that we've run into. It's how do you get the balance? How do you provide the scalability in the process?
Yeah, so the value of this is, there are a few European customers actually. I can mention a couple of them because we've already talked about them openly, like Danske Bank and KBC in Belgium, that actually went through these programs and they actually onboarded to Office 365. And these are serious, big financial institutions that had a number of questions. We spent days with them answering all of these questions about the audits, the risks that they had to take, that they had to mitigate and things like that to actually onboard them onto the service. And they're on the service now. And there are a few others globally around the world that I can't really mention the names of, but they're going through the program as well to go to the service. So as we're going through this, as I mentioned, it's a journey. We're also learning what the large customers want, what the medium customers want, what the small customers want, and how do we enable them to get all of this in a scalable global online service. Okay. So what are the benefits of compliance? I think we talked about this throughout the presentation, but the uber benefits we get it, independent verification, regulatory compliance, et cetera, that you can use in your specific industries. But the key point here is, key thing here is risk management. Like, how do you have this risk management conversation within your organizations, and how do you assess the risk, et cetera? And we'll talk about risk management a little bit more. So all of these things that we do, whether it's control sets, the compliance and the audits that we do, is all of these things is to mitigate risk, to also give you the proof that, look, these are the things that we are doing to mitigate risk, whether it's risk to your data being accessed by somebody in an unauthorized way, or your data getting simply lost and things like that. So risk is the nature of the world. So it we face risk constantly, whether it's from competitors, external events, bad actors, etc. But the key thing is to understand how do you view risk, when you go to the cloud. So there are four things that you can do with the risk, right? Fundamentally, you can mitigate risk, you can transfer a risk, or you can accept a risk, or simply avoid the risk, right? With Office 365, what happens is a number of these risks can be mitigated by Microsoft. Like, we got it. We take care of a lot of these things for you, whether it's, you know, access to data, data protection, encryption of data to make sure the data integrity is maintained and things of that nature. All of these are mitigated by Microsoft. A lot of the things that you traditionally do on on-prem, in your on-prem environments, can now be simply transferred over to Microsoft so we can take care of it for you.
Yeah, if you think about, for example, like a big area for years, especially if you're a mid-size or a small organization, is business continuity. How do I deal with the loss of a facility? So if you're a European customer who's onboarding the service today, we are going to provision you with capacity in both Dublin and in Amsterdam. And that is a geographic dispersion that you may not be able to afford on your own. But the fact that we run these enormous data centers in these different locations, we can provide you with significant geographic diversity. And that's just something that you pick up. And so your service is going to be more available than you might even be able to provide as an in-house service. If you look, too, internally, it's not just that we are rolling out controls. We're also looking at this as a risk conversation, even internally within Microsoft. So what I've got here is a snippet, again, from NIST. But basically what you can see is, and if you've not read this before, it can be a little bit painful. I know the first few times I looked at this, my eyes hurt, and I had to go get a cup of coffee, right? But when you look at this, what this is about is figuring out what the system is for, picking the right controls, implementing them, assessing their effectiveness, deciding if the system is adequate, and then providing ongoing monitoring. So even internally, when we are building these systems, we have defined some threat vectors that we're worried about. We've defined scenarios that we think are relevant to our customers, and we have said these controls are important because they go to mitigate these risks. And that helps us internally to look at these controls and say, if this control is failing for some reason, well, how significant is that failure? So even inside of Microsoft, it's not simply that we are just deploying controls, but we are thinking about risk, and we're thinking about risk from the eyes of our customers, because this is significant. An analogy I use with a lot of people internally is, if I'm running a bank, and today in your basement you have a safe, and you've taken a bunch of your precious documents or your family heirlooms and you've put them in the safe, and I'm the bank manager and I ask you to come use a safe deposit box at my bank, you have to know that safe deposit box is either equal or better, and preferably better at the bank than what you can do on site, right? And so we really want to take a customer-centric perspective of what do you need when you consume a cloud service, not just, hey, here's the service we have, we hope you'll sign up for it. And we think that if we are good at doing that, if we're really thinking about it from your lens and your perspective, that it's going to end up being the right solutions. So one thing, too, that we've alluded to briefly is we do provide a high degree of customer configuration. What we want to do with some of the features that are out there, again, DLP or whatever these what we call information protection features, if you look at them, we want to provide you with a lot of capability to help in managing the risk, because there is a sharing that goes on here. There is so much that I can do for you, but at the end of the day, I don't know, for example, what are the sensitive emails that you might have going out? And if you're a bank, you might say, well, sensitive emails tend to contain these types of strings in them. These are the patterns that you look for, and you want to stop those emails from going out of the organization. If you're a credit card processor, you have a different set of patterns that you look for. But we want to enable functionality that helps you to be able to share in that conversation. And then we also recognize that there are things that you are going to have to do inside your own company. Because as Vijay said, I can screen employees all day long. I can make sure that the people that are running the service, that I trust them. But if you don't trust your own employees, it falls apart. And so there is a shared element that has to exist when we talk about managing risk.
Just real quick to summarize, some of the things that we covered, we have comprehensive controls. We have deep engineering investments. This is not some couple of people sitting there just going through the certifications. This is embedded within our engineering teams. We have extensive experience building enterprise software. So we use all of that experience to bring it to the cloud, a cloud service. And privacy is a core component of Microsoft DNA. And we'll talk a little bit more about privacy in a little bit. But before that, I did want to touch on the other aspect of compliance, which is, we talked about, two dimensions of compliance. The compliance customer controls. How do we build in the controls? What are the controls that we're building in within Office 365 to ensure that you can have organizational compliance? And some of these kind of these compliance controls ladder up to the larger service compliance as well, and we'll talk about it. And just an overview of this, we have the following compliance controls. Of course, some of these things border between compliance and security, but data loss prevention. We have data loss prevention capabilities in email today. And on Tuesday, we announced, and I also have a blog about it in blogs.office.com. We are expanding data loss prevention capabilities to SharePoint and in the future other workloads like Office. For example, you can have specific data prevention policies created for when your employees upload presentations to SharePoint, so you can block them or educate them to make sure that they're aware that they're sharing sensitive content. We will bring you the ability to have data loss prevention right at the creation phase of a document. If you open an Office document and you're creating some sensitive document, sensitive information in there, then we can warn you right away. So those are the kinds of capabilities that we're building so we can give you the controls that you need to protect your sensitive content. When we talk to customers, they're more concerned about protecting certain types of sensitive content and not just all content, because they don't want security and compliance to become to hinder their productivity. So they want to carefully decide what types of content they want to protect. We also have data retention and lifecycle, archiving, of course. E-discovery, we have extensive e-discovery capabilities, and we're building more as we go, increasing the scale of e-discovery and things of that nature. And finally, auditing. We want to give you auditing capabilities right within the admin portal. And I'll quickly show you some of the things that how we are surfacing in Office 365 itself. For example, if you go to the admin portal, I'm logged in here as an admin. We have compliance capabilities right up here. I'll try to zoom it a bit more. So, as you can see, the compliance management capabilities that we're bringing will be built into Office 365. We're also coming up with something called a Unified Compliance Center that will come sometime next year, where we will have all of these things for all the workloads across Office 365. We'll have in-place discovery and hold, auditing, data loss prevention, et cetera, all under this. So you can configure it based on your needs, based on the needs of your organization. So get back to the presentation here. So, I did talk to you about data loss prevention already, so I'll skip over those slides. I need to be conscious of time so we can have some Q&A. So just a real quick, we also introduced something called DLP document fingerprinting. So basically what you can do is you can take a fingerprint of a document. Let's say you're a financial organization or a pharmaceutical organization for that matter. You have a very a specific type of document that you want to protect within your organization so people don't send it, users don't send it out inadvertently or maliciously. So what you can do is you can do a fingerprint of that document. We take a fingerprint of the document, we create a hash of it. We don't store the contents of the document, but we create a hash of it. From that point on, you can apply DLP policies so that we can block your users, or you can educate your users about sending out that sensitive content outside the organization. Anytime anybody tries to send anything that looks like that document, we measure the confidence level. If it's 80% close to what the original sensitive document looks like, you can block it. So you can do all sorts of interesting things to protect specific sensitive information within Office 365, Exchange, SharePoint, and other workloads. I talked about email archiving and retention. Because it's your data, you own it, so we want to enable you to have abilities like archiving and being able to hold certain types of content for litigation or what have you, and also enable easy search in e-discovery. Right? So let's get into the next important topic, which is privacy. Have about 10 minutes before yep. Q&A. So.
So I'm assuming that most folks in the room are familiar with the Article 29 Working Party. If you're not, there's been important European legislation over the years, and it's established essentially a committee called the Article 29 Working Party. And these are people who are experts in data privacy. These are folks who are worried about enforcing European rights and making sure that everything is being adhered to. They recently came out and they positively reaffirmed our commitment to privacy. We were very, very proud to receive that endorsement from them. And at least last I've heard, we were the only provider to have had our privacy commitments positively reaffirmed in the last round by the Article 29 Working Party. So what we're hoping that you'll take away from that is that privacy is a very sensitive and a very big deal for us. When we look at the model clauses, which is actually what the European or the Article 29 Working Party was affirming, what we're seeing in that point it really is the encapsulation of a lot of commitments that are out there. And so when we talk about why model clauses matter, as many of you probably know, it was in 1950 that a lot of the initial European legislation came together to ensure the human right to privacy. And this has now been going on. There's been a lot of thought in this area for over 60 years. So Europe, more than anyone else, has by far the most advanced thinking about privacy and what does it mean. And as Vijay mentioned, we were the first major cloud service provider to offer the model clauses. Our model clauses were recently, again, reaffirmed. And we're just happy that we're able to be there for you because, again, I think to the question that was asked a minute ago, this is a big question. If I'm going to use a cloud service, what happens to my data? Is it going to be protected? How is it going to be used? Is there sufficient transparency in terms of how the service is being run? What do I tell my users? What do I tell my regulators? How do I answer my CISO? These are all the questions that we are going to be asked as IT professionals, right? You're in here, you're saying, this is great. I've got this service. It's really cost efficient. This is, you know, I've got this great geographic redundancy, all of these things. I get all these features. But if I'm not using the data that I've been entrusted to correctly, something doesn't add up in that. So again, model clauses, if you're not familiar, it does set standards for data protection. It also imposes on us obligations that we have to flow down to any subprocessors that we use when we're providing the service. And if you want to see the list of subprocessors that we use, we post that publicly. So, and we have processes to make sure that our obligations flow down to them. In terms of what privacy means for us, a big part of that is no advertising. We will not take the data that you upload and use that for advertising purposes. We will be transparent with you about where your data is located. We will be transparent about who has access and when they have access to it. And we will provide ongoing notifications to you as things change within the cloud. Because you, to be an empowered consumer of the cloud, you have to know what's going to happen before it happens. It's not simply adequate to find out that something has changed 3 months prior. You have to know before it happens. And the other thing is, we want to provide you with extensive controls in the service about how data is being used. And so what you'll find, and this is tricky, because Vijay showed the admin interface, and this is the ongoing challenge that we have every day of how do I provide you with granular control over data and how it's used and where it flows without making this so complex that it's sort of like, you know, I remember as a kid, the first time you go up into the cockpit of the jet engine aircraft and you see that they have like 500 different switches and lights all over the thing. We don't want our admin interface to be that way, but we want to make sure that you have granular control over how the service is operating and the features that your users can actually take advantage of.
yeah. speak about this?
Just this is the slide that this gentleman was, you know, hopefully addresses the question of the gentleman here. So we've made some very public commitments, very public statements about these things. So I'll point you to some blogs and things like that, the resources that you can actually go look at. So, we don't provide any government with direct unfettered access to data. If there are, we don't assist any governments to break our encryption keys. We don't share, we don't build backdoors into our service. As some of these, the rumors and innuendo suggest that we are involved in any way in sharing these types of information with the governments and things like that. It is not. We are not involved. So this is basically something that we put out there in the blogs, and I can show you where you can find them. You can read about what our commitment is towards this issue, right? And transparency is very important to us. And as I mentioned, we publish every six months a transparency report about the number of requests that we get from governments asking for data that they may want, right? So this is out there, microsoft.com/transparency, I think, website. I'll point you to it. We're also transparent about where your data is stored. We publish what are called data maps in our trust center. We tell you at least regionally, if you're located in Europe, where your data actually resides, where your Exchange data resides, where your SharePoint data resides, where your Link data resides, where your Active Directory data resides. Same thing for APAC or other regions. We actually publish this types of data. We also say who has access to your data. We do mention in the trust center there's a clear table that shows. What type of access do administrators have? What type of access do support personnel have, and things like that? And I'll talk about it. And we also commit that any time there is a change in anything with respect to your data, we inform our customers about it. So here's a slide about data centers and data location, real quick. I just wanted to show you. We have many data centers for our online services, and these specifically speak to Office 365 data centers. As you can see, we have data centers in all the regions, APAC, LATAM, Europe, and Asia Pac. And as we go, we're continually investing in building new data centers and to bring the data closer to you. For European customers, how this matters is we actually have a contract called M170. I think the customers can sign with us that where we commit, we will not take your customer core content out of Europe, out of the borders of Europe. Right? And this is the about the privacy of your data. This is the table that I was talking about. I'll point you to it. It's an eye chart. It's hard to see from there, but this shows what type of access do different roles have within Microsoft to your data. There's usage data, address book data, customer data, and things like that. And we actually want to be transparent about what type of data we have access to. So our vision for transparency and compliance, real quick, is we want to make sure we shared all of the control sets and everything with you. Our vision is, going forward, we want to make it available to you more and more, so you can do a lot of this risk assessment on your own, right? You want to say something here?
Sure. No, this is a lot of the internal discussion that we're having right now. It is simply that, how do we, like I said, scale this out, but provide you with tremendous transparency into what we're doing, how we've rationalized these different obligations together. There is a lot of detailed discussion going on internally. I've been writing specs internally for teams to talk about how we unify this data, how we share this out. I don't have an exact timeline for when that lands, but we want to increasingly provide you with more transparency. One of the things that I told internal auditors for years, and I've developed a lot of internal auditors who were 22, 23 years old, this was their first job coming out of college, and I used to say to them, transparency builds trust. If you want people to trust you, you have to be transparent with them. And so increasingly that is really the motive here, is we want to make this as obvious to you as possible about what we're doing on your behalf.
Great. Thanks. Just to sum it all up, we talked about, these are the different topics we talked about. I want to be conscious of the time and allow time for Q&A. All of the resources you should be able to access on the Trust Center, trust.office365.com. If you go there, you will see the information that we share about security, privacy, compliance, and transparency. We have white papers on things like security, customer controls for security and compliance, privacy, transparency, and we also publish our quarterly uptime. Every quarter, we come out and say what was our worldwide uptime for Office 365. As you can see, the latest quarter, our quarterly uptime was 99.99%. We also have a financially backed SLA, where if we miss the uptime for any particular customer, we do actually, compensate them. So those are the resources. I urge you all to go look at trust.office365.com. So with that, I want to open the floor for some questions. Like I said, I have some giveaways here. I can to motivate you to ask some good questions here.
Sorry. Can you give us a statement on the current New York case?
On the current?
The case in New York City. There was a case.
There was a case in New York City, I think. Okay. That was the one that where the customer data was requested. We're not here to make a statement about any particular legal case or anything today, but as far as we know, the latest status was that we were still fighting that case in the court.
So you're still fighting until the end, right?
I didn't catch the last part.
Can you repeat the question?
So you will fight until the end, right?
that's for sure. We will fight until the end.
First of all, thanks for the overview. I have a question. I'm coming from Germany, and probably you know that's a really complex regulations there and so on. And my question is, do you provide service for the legal departments of particular companies, probably from your side? Because I know that's a lot, tons of information, but to go through, it's impossible. So it has to do the legal department of particular company, and probably it would be easy if you would have a real specialist and the legal department sitting together for, I don't know, a couple of weeks or a couple of days, not sure how complex it is. Do you offer there, or would you have steps that I could offer my customers to really get an alignment on this topic?
Yeah. Great question. We talked about the compliance program, and that was the intent of the program. So what we put in place for that program just for that reason alone, right? So today we have it for financial services customers because they were like one of the regulated ones. They were asking them the largest number of questions. But we're also looking at opening up to healthcare and other verticals. So basically, what that program allows you to do is you can contact your account representative, or you can just shoot me an email, and we can have this discussion, getting a customer into that program. So with that program, what we do is we have annual summits with these customers, where we spend with our engineering team, we spend like 3 days with them, showing them all of the reports and the what we do, how we do it. And things of that nature to answer all of their questions. And then we have a continuing dialogue with them on Yammer and other things to make sure that they have the answers that they need, right?
I think the one thing you'll hear too is you're likely to get an initial response of, we can't provide you with legal advice. And so just to understand where that's coming from, right? It's we cannot be your in-house counsel, but what we can do is we can provide information, as you say, to the decision makers inside your organization to enable them to be intelligent in the decisions that they make.
That's exactly the point I'm asking for, because yes, they are not able to read a ton of books. But if there's someone from you who says, in the second book, on this page, you have your answer that covers exactly your requirements, great, that's what I'm seeking for.
Okay. Well, Vijay had offered to help you with email, so I'll be more than happy to
definitely.
Okay.
Let
you guys.
Yeah. Yes. And just curious, what industry is this? Is this
it's from a pharmaceutical industry.
Okay, great. I think we should have a conversation. Okay.
It's not really a question, it's something that I would like to hear more. I would like all these standards and all this, pretty much all what we saw today to be advertised much more, like it was advertised the unlimited storage, yeah, for the OneDrive for Business, because so far I have to convince my clients to go to Office 365, and I would like actually you guys to convince them, and whenever I say to them, okay, we have to deal with large amount of data, instead of keeping it on premise and pay a lot, we can go on Office 365 because it's cheap. And they should say, yeah, fine, I'm okay with that because it's secure. At this moment, I have to convince them.
Okay. So
it's an advice. It's not really a question.
No, thank you. Well, thanks for the feedback. You're familiar with the Trust Center, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's not enough. I would like advertised a lot, you know, like you to go to my client, and my client, when it comes to me and I say Office 365, they should be, oh, I'm already aware that guys are doing there a big progress on it. So, yeah.
Okay, we'll try harder for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a direct feedback for me. Thank you.
Okay.
Other questions?
Yeah, there's one more. So I have to get rid of all of these, so ask them.
Thank you.
Questions.
On one of the slides you have presented the archiving, it was presented in the context of the exchange. I was wondering if the archiving is somehow already understood in the context of the SharePoint Online, or if there are any plans in the future to add new functionality in the archiving area for SharePoint Online.
Yeah, the short answer, yes, we do have plans to have archiving for SharePoint Online as well. I don't have any specific timelines or dates, but that's the point. I think there is an archiving session. I'd urge you to go to it. Stop by the booth. We can speak about it.
Okay, because currently in the SharePoint Online, you have a functionality like hold. Yeah. And I was wondering if there is, if you can already somehow share with us some news about any kind of other techniques to achieve archiving that are ongoing.
Well, we do have as he mentioned, that we have the booth, and there is a SharePoint booth specifically. So if you want to stop by, there will be experts there throughout the day, every day, and they can probably provide you with a little more detail about what features are out there and when they're coming.
Yeah, but one thing we're working on is something called a Unified Compliance Center. So everything that we have in Exchange, we want to leverage that and bring it across all workloads and have one compliance center for Office 365 where you can have, you know, e-discovery, archiving, auditing, and things like that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
In one of the slides, you've showed the report where we can list all the controls that you have. Is this something already available or is on the roadmap?
It's on the roadmap. We don't have exact dates yet, but like I mentioned, we're building functionality internally. We're looking at how we would go about delivering that. So I don't have exact dates. I suspect that once the dates become a little bit more crisp, that you'll actually see communication through our marketing department, because what they're doing is they are broadcasting all of the planned features that are on our roadmap, and that would simply be another feature. We view compliance, privacy, and security as core features within the service, just like anything else.
Okay. Yeah, but we do have, this feedback. We do have audit reports available, we can send directly to customers.
Yes. What about international companies? So I have around 180 offices in different locations in the world. Can I specify this, from this office, the data should be hosted there, and this office should be there, or is it just one location where I can say it?
Yeah, today when it comes to data location, it is based on where your tenant is, you know, it was created, or where you're headquartered. For example, if you're in Germany and you create a tenant, and your data will be hosted in the Ireland and Netherlands data centers. And that's the level of granularity we have today.
So example for my colleagues in Miami, data is somewhere in the States then?
So if your colleagues are in...
So my next office in the States, so in Florida, so this data is in the States then?
So if there are users within the same tenant, yeah. Even if the users are in the US, their data will be hosted in Europe.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, you mentioned that Danske Bank as a reference. Is there an official list with, let's say, high profile reference that could be used to convince potential customers?
I don't specifically have a reference itself, but I do believe I have something that will help you.
I wasn't meaning like an official with contact information, but more like a list with 10, let's say, high profile companies like Danske Bank or...
Yeah, that is something that we're building on. A lot of these, lot of our customers don't, obviously, for obvious reasons, don't want to do that. But I can probably share with you something that you can use today. But that is something that we're working on, building a reference list and a case study.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. You told that you guarantee that the government doesn't snoop data. But I have read in the newspapers and all that this is not true, that Microsoft has given the NSA the data. And here in Switzerland, we are really, we don't like that very much, like other one too. How can you guarantee that this is not true? And how will you really prove my customers also that you do not do that? Because this is one of the most reason that my customers don't want to go to Office 365, because they believe NSA knows everything.
So the best information that we can offer you today is the public statements that we've made about it, and publicly. I mean, this is not by, this is by our chief legal counsel who reports to our CEO. We have some public statements that we've made that kind of reaffirms our commitments and what we do and what we don't do. And we can, I can share that with you again. And it's been out there. It's public statements. And people can read that and make their judgments. No. Actually, it is linked on the Trust Center.
The other thing
you see the fourth link right here. Actually, let me give you this. This has the URL, trust.office365.com. If you go there, the fourth link on the right, it says protecting customers' data from government snooping. That's one of the articles that he's written, right? And there are a number of other articles that you can. Okay.
Are you planning to build more data centers in Europe, for example, in Switzerland, with legal place in Switzerland?
So, I mean, all we can say is we are continuously looking at, evaluating building new data centers. That's an ongoing investment area for us. I can't say anything more than that. I think we're out of time. So we're going to hang out here for a little bit longer. If you want to have any more questions, we can answer them.
Did you have one last one?
Yeah, there have been rumors around that you may be building a European or German data center with a partner or something like that, but as I heard now, you think about a global data center, so what can you say about that?
No, I can't. Sorry. I have to give the mic back, but I'll hang up.